Feeling stuck by a tough life decision? Wondering how to navigate career and leadership changes without chaos? Welcome to Problem Solved, the podcast where we cut through the confusion and turn uncertainty into action. I'm your host, Cheryl Strauss Einhorn, and I'm here to empower you with a powerful tool, the AREA Method. Forget overwhelm, forget endless Googling, get ready to make confident, well-researched decisions that take charge of your life. Whether it's finding the perfect college, the ideal career path, or the best care for your loved ones. This isn't just about theory. Here we'll tackle real-world scenarios, dive into inspiring stories, and equip you with actionable steps. So buckle up, listeners, because it's time to say goodbye to indecision and hello to solutions. I'm excited to have Kim Cope with us today on the Problem Solved podcast. Kim is a partner in a fan engagement agency, Bright Ideas Only. She's worked with A-listers such as Paul McCartney, Oprah, the New York Mets, even Shawn Mendes to create marketing programs, new revenue streams, and branding. Her latest obsession is transferring that same blueprint to business owners, executives, and leaders, garnering her the praise of corporate clients, including American Express, TEDx, and LinkedIn. You might recognize her voice from ABC's Shark Tank, from her role as a judge in the 2019 Miss USA pageant live, or from social media. Previously, she was named to Inc.'s 35 Under 35, advertising ages 40 Under 40, and Forbes 30 Under 30. Welcome, Kim. All right, Kim, why is problem solving important?
For me, problem solving is kind of the whole crux of being a human in business, because at the end of the day, most of us are dealing with other humans. And if you're dealing with other humans, then it is only natural that problems occur. And so I think one of the toughest challenges in business, but also the most rewarding, is when you become unafraid to deal with problems, to sink into problems, to be willing to solve problems, as opposed to maybe some of us who still like to run away from problems or bury problems or not deal with problems. So for me, I'm always really trying to go into problem solving mode with my whole heart and all my effort and not trying to shy away from it.
Well, that's beautiful. Diving right in so that you can solve them. I love that. Tell us a little bit about your background. How did you get started in your career?
Yeah, I call myself an accidental entrepreneur. I always dreamed of working at a big corporate job, and I fulfilled that dream out of university with a big corporate job, which I did for about 2.5 years, almost 3 years, before I started my own business 13 years ago. So now it's gotten to the point where I've been working for myself much longer than I was working for somebody else. But I think what it has done is it's given me a really unique perspective to say that I've played on both sides of the coin. I know what it's like to sit in a corporate job with rules and regulations and bosses that you might not agree with. And I also know what it's like to sit on sort of like the freelance or entrepreneurial or work for yourself train, which also sometimes leads with people that you don't agree with or, you know, working under limitations that you might not like. And so I think it's lent itself to a really great perspective shift for me that I'm able to kind of look at it both ways.
Well, that's great. Tell us a little bit about why brand and fan engagement, and would you define those terms for us?
Yeah, it was a trend that we were really seeing as more and more of social media came to take over our lives. I always tell people you kind of have to put yourself in the mindset of 13 years ago when we were all still listening to Pandora and like iTunes was just something that was coming up where we would pay 99 cents for things and Spotify didn't exist. And, you know, we were still buying CDs at Walmart and magazines at Target. It was just a much different way to consume entertainment and a much different way for fans to connect with their favorite music artist or their favorite author or their favorite movie film star. It was just a very different way that we consumed that entertainment. But the thing that we did see and that we continue to see today is that people really want that deep connection, whether it is they are so in love with their favorite soccer player, or they are so in love with their favorite, you know, book author, or they're so in love with their favorite music artist. Is just really fostering that connection. And the way that we specifically try to do it as much as possible is giving people tangible goods that they can use and hold and wear and carry around that makes them feel closer to their favorite thing. So that whether that is your favorite cozy hoodie that represents your favorite band, or whether that is a limited edition book with insider notes from your favorite author, or whether that is a catchphrase from your favorite comedian that is now on like a really cute pillow that you can have on the couch. Whatever that is, our goal is to create physical items that you can buy or purchase or experience that lets you feel that connection with those people.
Oh, that's really fun. Tell me a little bit. We mentioned in your bio about Shark Tank. Yeah. And so talk about how that experience was and how it influenced your business strategy.
Shark Tank was a really unique experience, and I think we were also a very unique business to be on Shark Tank. Most of the businesses that are featured on Shark Tank are product-based businesses. So they are selling a physical item to consumers. It could be peanut butter, it could be socks, it could be t-shirts, whatever it is. We were a little bit different because we're a B2B business. So we aren't being hired by consumers like you would for a peanut butter company or a sock company or a beverage company. We're being hired by management teams, agents, artists, etc. So we were a little bit of an anomaly to be on the show, but I think the amazing part of being on the show and one of the best gifts from being on the show is that many people don't realize that it is the gift that keeps on giving. So Shark Tank is a syndicated TV show. So just like Friends or Seinfeld or any of these, you know, TV shows that you grew up loving, that when you turn on TBS or TNT, you'll see, oh, it's a Law and Order marathon, or it's a, you know, Shark Tank marathon on MSNBC. So even though we filmed that episode way back in 2015, I would say about every 6 months, I will get a random text message or an email from somebody who's in the gym or on a flight, and they take a picture and they're like, there you are, I'm on the treadmill, you know, your episode's on. And so it's really interesting because they do these marathons all the time. So it really is the gift that keeps on giving, because our episode continues to re-air over and over again, which is great. And we had a great cut and, you know, got deals on the show from Robert and Lori. Even though we didn't go through with those deals in real life, it was a wonderful cut of the show that still benefits us today. So I'm really grateful for that experience.
So I have to just follow that up then. What was the decision to turn them down?
Yeah, I think when we both kind of got into it with our teams, you know, it kind of reminds me of that TLC show, Married at First Sight. You know, you want to date someone normally. Like, you don't just meet someone on a first date and say like, that's it, we're getting married. And when somebody invests in your company, that is like a marriage. You know, they're putting money in, you're signing contracts, you are contractually bound to one another, very much like a marriage. And so it was one of those things where the first date was really fun. And it was like, yeah, like maybe we can get married. Like, this sounds really good. But then when we dug into it and their lawyers and our lawyers, and we all kind of sat down, we're like, you know what? I think we would make really great friends. I don't know if we're like in this for the long term. And so we've helped them in the years since, just on like an ad hoc basis. But from a financial standpoint, it just didn't make sense to kind of go through a business marriage, if you will, when we kind of got into the details. But they're wonderful people and their teams are so wonderful. So we're still really grateful for it.
Interesting. So what's been the toughest business decision that you've had to make? Was that it? Or was there a different one that you had to navigate? And talk to us about how you did it.
I think the toughest business decision that I've personally navigated continues to be with myself. I think a lot of times anyone in life has a lot of outside opinions, whether that's your mom, whether that's your dad, whether that's your spouse, whether that's your friends, whether that's your family, the industry, who, especially when you're running a company and you're finding success and you're finding a lot of great things that are happening for you. What do people say? Kim, you got to pour gasoline on the fire, bigger, better, stronger, more employees, more offices, more. And I think the hardest decision I've ever had to make was really sitting down and deciding, is that actually what I want? Or is that what society is telling me I should want? And for a number of years, I did it because I was on the train tracks and the train was going, and that's what I did. But I sort of woke up a couple years into the business, and it was one of those situations where we've all been there. Your life from the outside, everything looks great. Everyone says, oh my God, Cheryl, your life is perfect. You know, oh, you've got this, you've got that. But on the inside, you're sort of miserable. And so it's like everybody else is happy, but you're not. And so I think the hardest decision I've ever had to make and really continue to make is saying, what's actually going to make me happy? And even if that goes against the grain, even if that is very surprising to some people, doing that. So in the case of my business, it's saying, I don't want to have an office in Manhattan with 16 employees anymore. I just want it to be my business partner and I want to run a boutique agency where we're super selective about who we work with, not an agency that's taking on hundreds of clients at a time. And that was a very hard decision to make. And I think kind of an intimidating one. And a lot of friends and family thought I was completely nuts and bonkers. But again, I think at the end of the day, you have to put your head on a pillow at the end of the night and say, I'm going to sleep well. I did the best I could today. And you're not going to toss and turn and stress and anxiety. And I can't go to sleep because everybody else is happy with your life, but you're not happy with your life.
Yeah, it sounds like a big risk in a way, not to grow, but to stay at a smaller level where you actually felt like you enjoyed your day more. And talk to us a little bit about, you know, sort of how that's paid off and the problems you solved for your clients.
I think it's definitely paid off for me on a personal level. And I think it's also paid off for my clients as well. You know, a lot of times when clients are coming to us, the sort of position that we really engage with in the market is, you know, I always say for every audience, there is a Macy's and there is a Neiman Marcus. Yeah. You know, there's a Honda Civic and there's a Mercedes-Benz. So there's going to be agencies that you are one of 150 clients that they have, and they are churning and burning you, and you're sort of a name and a number on a stick. And that's great. And that's totally perfect for people that kind of say, I want the, you know, McDonald's experience of doing something. And for us, we're taking on maybe 4 to 6 clients at a time. You have my personal cell phone number. You have my business partner and co-founder's personal cell phone number. You're getting us. You're not getting passed off to a 22-year-old project manager. You're working with us from start to finish. It's much more hands-on. It's much more white glove. And so I think the clients that really appreciate that and want that continue to come back. And that's why, knock on wood, we've had a lot of the same clients for years and years, because we do a really great job, I like to think, at the things that we're doing well. But it allows us the opportunity to not have to churn and burn, which I think a lot of the kind of agencies or business, that's just kind of how their model works. It's sort of like, how many hamburgers can we spit out, as opposed to like, how can we craft a really wonderful one gourmet burger a day sort of thing.
Oh, so a real customized solution. So share sort of one big decision that a client came to you with and how you helped them arrive at the right solution for them.
I think honestly, some of the, I don't know if it's a big decision, but definitely some of the harder decisions that we have with clients is, and I say harder for myself from a business standpoint, is deciding that we're not the best person to work with. In fact, we just sent an email this morning. It's funny that you're bringing this up. We sort of wavered on sending an email this morning because it was a big job. It was going to be a 6-figure job. It was not some like small potatoes thing. And we said, this person could work with us. However, this other thing might also be a viable solution for them. And maybe that's a way that they want to go. And most people in business who run their own businesses or are very business minded would say, you know, take the six figures and run as fast as you can. But I think one thing that I'm always looking at and when I'm problem solving with clients is saying, let's look at all the potential solutions, even if the potential solution isn't me, because I'd rather you find the right answer for you at this moment in time. And I like to think, you know, it sounds a little silly with, you know, karma, but I like to think that even if we're not the answer right now, the fact that I helped you get to that answer, maybe in 2 years, you say, you know what, I'm going to go back to Kim because she is going to be honest and she's going to tell me, and maybe now is the right time. And so I really stick with that business philosophy of you have to solve the right problem, even if you're not the solution to that problem.
Well, that's lovely. Let's focus on the flip side, which is about mistakes in decision making. What are some common mistakes that you find that you help your clients navigate past?
A lot of times the mistakes that we see coming up quite a bit are people are not speaking the same language. And what I mean by that, and you might have experienced this at your own work, is you're in a meeting or something and someone says, well, I need the answer fast. And everyone goes, okay, great. They leave the meeting. Well, let's say somebody in that meeting works in Nashville. And somebody else in that meeting works in New York. And somebody else in that meeting works in Los Angeles. Those are all three different, very different styles of fast. You know, it's a New York minute. That person might leave the meeting thinking, I need an answer in 24 hours. And if you don't have an answer for me, we're in trouble. Whereas the LA person might say, well, I'm on a different time zone. Maybe fast is by the end of my day tomorrow, which is the middle of the night for the, you know, East Coast person. And the Nashville person, it's a Friday and they're going, well, I only work on business days. So yeah. I'm not getting this until Monday. I'm not dealing with this on a Friday afternoon. So one thing that I always try to dig into with clients is making sure we're all speaking the same language. And whether that is the use of analogies or whether that is the use of examples, it's something that I always try to drill down with clients because I think it's a problem that happens often, whether it is with due dates, whether it's with budgets. That's another thing. I was talking to a client about 2 days ago and they said, Kim, I just want your most creative ideas. And I said, okay, well, what's the budget? There's no budget. I want your most creative ideas. And I said, okay, well, if I come back to you and this thing's going to cost $80,000, how are you going to feel about that? And they went, whoa, whoa, whoa. Now I'm not, well, I don't know, $80,000. This is a limited edition. And I went, exactly. So the budget's not really anything I come up with. So let's really drill down, you know, what's a number that if I came back to you with, you know, you wouldn't be shivering in your boots. Okay, that number's more 40 to 50,000 that I can work with. So sometimes it's the problem solving is merely throwing out sort of extreme examples to get people to settle on an idea that you know you can both live with.
That's a great example of sort of not only setting the guardrails, but then helping to anchor people where they want to be. Let's shift into the differences between how you make decisions at work and outside of work. How different is that? And you know, what do you think about that?
So I'm definitely a little more contrarian when it comes to this. I know that people have sort of two schools of thought of, you know, how I am at work is, you know, work Kim, and then at home, like personal life is personal Kim. And for me, I've never been able to really code switch like that. A lot of times I'm solving problems in the same way, whether it is, you know, something to deal with my house and the plumbing is broken and I got to find a way to fix it. Or if it is we're off budget with a client and we got to figure out how to get back in budget. So a lot of times sort of the three-step process that I take is really one, evaluating the problem completely. So looking at all different potential solutions to that problem, you know, plan A, plan B, plan C. Number two, running that planned by other people. So whether that is my husband, whether that is my best friend, whether that is my co-founder, you know, whoever that is, I think decisions made alone are often not great. You need an outside perspective, whoever that is in your life or in your work life. So number two is really finding that other voice to kind of give reason to what you're doing. And the third thing is to check up on your solution. I think a lot of times people make a solution, they kind of pat themselves back on the back, and they kind of carry on their merry way. And what I've really found to be beneficial over the years is checking back in, maybe setting a reminder in my phone for a week later, maybe setting a reminder on my computer for 2 weeks later, whatever it is, and making sure, like, hey, did that plumbing job get done? Did the plumber get paid? Are we all set there? Okay, great. We can clear it off, you know, with a client. Okay, double checking 2 weeks ago that you got everything you need. You're happy. You're set. You have my cell phone number if you need anything. Okay, great. I think taking that extra step and really kind of finishing the loop and making sure whatever it is that you're problem solving for actually got done in a way that people are happy is really important. And especially if you are doing any sort of customer service or own your own business in any way, I think it's vitally important, because you never want someone to kind of just be okay with an answer, but not really satisfied. And you don't know that until you ask the question. And a lot of times when I do go back and ask that question, they'll say, well, actually, you know, Kim, it really would be great to get 5 more samples because the lead singer was asking me for one. Okay, great. I didn't know that. Like, happy to get those 5 samples. We'll get them overnighted to you. And you don't know unless you ask.
That's a great idea to sort of, you think the decision is done and made, but to actually find out, is it actually done and made in somebody else's mind or whoever you're making it with? And what can you learn about how it's beginning to play out? I think that's great. How about your approach to decision making when there's no clear right answer?
That I definitely struggle with that. I am a self-admitted people pleaser. I definitely want everybody to be happy with a decision making. But again, 13 years in business, I also know that there are going to be times, and I've had them, and they're painful and they're awful, that nobody's happy. Yeah. That you cannot make that other person happy. You cannot solve the problem. They are perpetually disappointed or perpetually unhappy. And that's a really tough place to be in. And the message that I always come back to for myself, and I encourage people to come back to for themselves, and I do this by using a pencil and a paper. I like to write things down, or you could also type it, is I list out everything that in my mind I would feel like if I did these 2 things, 3 things, 5 things, whatever it is, and it still wasn't enough, I'm okay walking away. And I've done that in work, and I've done that even like back in my personal life when I had like boyfriends or whatever, you know, it was like, here are the things I'm willing to budge on. Here are the things I'm not willing to budge on. If we can't get to a place where this is okay, then just, I'm not everybody's flavor. You know, I'm not everybody's flavor, and that's okay. And I just have to walk away and know that I did my best.
I really like that idea. Can I ask you where in the problem solving process you put that? So you're close to the end, or you know, there's not going to be an agreement. Where does that go in your process?
Usually that happens about the second or third time after I've come up with a solution. So, you know, the client says, I'm using this as an example, Kim, we did these sweatshirts. I'm not happy with the color, as an example. I might say, okay, well, option one, I understand you're not happy with the color. Why don't you send them all back to us, and we will rerun them with a slightly darker color. And if the person says, again, just being contrarian here, well, I don't want to do that because I have all the product now and I don't want to send it back to you. Okay, solution number two, you can keep all the product even though it's wrong, and we will send you new product. You know, you can trash that or whatever it is, and we'll send you new product. Well, I don't want to do that because I don't want to hold all this new inventory. Okay, so you don't want me to take back the old inventory. You don't want me to send you new inventory. This is when I start going, okay, I'm starting to get a sense that kind of nothing we say is going to make this person happy. And that's kind of when I'll write out things like, do we give them a refund? Or, you know, do we offer them half off or whatever that problem solve is going to be? And then I say, okay, we're going to go back with one next solution, which is we'll give you a discount. And then after that, I've offered three super viable solutions. And if you're not going to take any of them or offer back something else, well, hey, what I'd like to do is I'll send you back half and maybe we can just fix the back half that are wrong or, you know, whatever it is. That's when I sort of tell myself kind of the age old three strikes and you're out. You know, if we start to get to like two or three solutions that just aren't working, that's when I start to kind of, it sends off my spidey sense, start working on that list.
I think that was so useful. I really appreciate that because that's something we all can do to have greater confidence and conviction that we're handling the problem in a way that we can be proud of, in a way that offers a middle ground with somebody else, so that even if a decision doesn't turn out the way that you'd hoped, you can really see how you've tried to engage with the person and with the process. Thank you. All right, so what's one thing that you think everyone could do each week to improve their career?
I think one of the easiest things that people can do and what I tell people to do all the time is really dig into resources like LinkedIn, like the LinkedIn Learning Library, which has a ton of free courses and paid courses that you can do. I think with so much knowledge from experts in the palm of your hand, if you just listen to 30 minutes of, you know, something that I was actually just telling my mom the other day, she was kind of saying like, Kim, ChatGPT and kind of all this AI stuff, it's kind of confusing to me and I don't really know what it is. And I said, Mom, if you spent 20 minutes, and my mom is 72, 73 now, I said, if you even spent 20 minutes a week, 30 minutes a week watching a YouTube video, watching a LinkedIn learning course, watching something about AI, I said, by the end of the month, you would probably have a pretty good idea of, I'm not saying you'd be an expert, you certainly wouldn't be, but you'd have a lot more knowledge and a lot better of a handle on what it is. So I always tell people, pick a topic, you know, maybe that for you, that is ChatGPT, or maybe that is AI, or maybe that is problem solving, or maybe that's delegation, or, you know, I don't know what it is that people are curious about, but I always tell people, pick a topic that you're curious about and dedicate 30 minutes a week. It's really not that much. We all have 30 minutes in a week. We really do. It's like, you got the time, make it happen.
Terrific. I think that's a really good suggestion and something, you know, that gives people a lot of flexibility to pick their topic and to engage with it in a variety of ways. So you often ask your own guests on Coffee with Kim, what's one new thing that you're doing to make your life easier these days? What's your answer?
One thing that I'm really trying to do to make my life as easy as possible these days is pick 2 to 3 high priority items to tackle for the day. I think that's something that I, you know, commonly as like a perfectionist and as somebody who wants to get to everything, you know, there are days where I'm sure like you, Cheryl, my to-do list is 23 items long. You know, there's always something I could be doing, whether that's work, whether that's groceries, whether that's my cousin's birthday is next week, I got to get a gift, the baby shower, you just constantly have a stream of things that you could be doing. And I think one thing that's really helped me that I've implemented pretty aggressively in the last 6 weeks since we've started the new year is saying, okay, Kim, you're not going to get to everything today. Hey, you might not even get to it by the end of the week. Let's pick 2 things that by the end of today, if they come off the list, that's a win. And I know for some people, they're going to kind of shrug their shoulders and go, oh, Kim, that's easy. I'm already doing it. But for anybody out there that is a perfectionist, that is a people pleaser, that loves the type A, color coded, everything is organized, You know better than anyone that there are some days where you're like, oh, I only got to two things. Like, terrible. What a horrible day. I didn't get, you know, you kind of beat yourself up. But one thing I've really tried to do and focus on in the last 6 weeks is say, you know, pick two or pick three at the most and get those things off the list and really as much as you can, slowly but surely chipping away at it, as opposed to having one full day where you don't get anything done. And then the next day you panic and you get eight things done, you know, when you're in this very up, down, yin yang sort of bouncing between nothing getting accomplished and a ton of stuff getting accomplished.
I like that it also asks you to think much more strategically about planning fallacy. How much can you get done? How long is it going to take? And have a sense of accomplishment. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the show. Would you talk a little bit about what haven't I asked you? What do you want people to know? And how can they find you?
The best place to find me is LinkedIn. I love spending time on that platform. I put out a ton of courses with LinkedIn Learning. I go live every single week on Wednesdays. So that is definitely the best place to find me and find the content that I'm putting out. And in terms of one thing that I would like to leave people with, or sort of a stretch goal, if anybody has it in mind, is I think that 2025 would be a lot stronger for all of us if we dug into our delegation a little bit more. I think that delegating is just beyond important. And I think, again, the more busy we all get, whether that's in our personal lives or our work lives, delegation becomes more important than ever. I just did like a nano course all about, a nano course is like a small, I think it's like a 10 minute or 15 minute course with LinkedIn Learning that's totally free, all about like small steps that you can take towards delegation. But that lately has been one of my favorite things to talk about or tell people about, because I just think, you know, there's a reason why they say it takes a village, and it really does take a village, and you can't do it all yourself, and you gotta learn to ask for help. And the faster you learn to ask for help, the faster you will get things accomplished in your life.
Well, I'll have to watch your course. It's a great topic, a wonderful skill, and nice to think that we can lean on others to help us to succeed. So thank
Absolutely.
You so much, Kim. It's been lovely having you. And thank you to all of our Problem Solve listeners for joining us today.
Thanks so much.